Here's a studio version of my Sunday sermon of October 21st at Y-East UU congregation. Unfortunately, we had some technical problems and didn't get it recorded during the service. I'll start with the reading. Dorothy and her two new friends, the Scarecrow and the Tin Woodsman, are walking through the dark forest following the what? And I remember that everybody knew they were following the yellow brick road. They are discussing what to do if there's any danger. The Scarecrow is only afraid of one thing, which is fire. The Tin Woodsman is mostly concerned about rusting, but he says he should be fine as long as he has his whale can. Dorothy is protected by the mark of the Good Witch's kiss, but what about her dog Toto? We must protect him ourselves if he is in danger, replied the Tin Woodman. Just as he spoke, there came through the forest a terrible roar, and the next moment a great lion bounded into the road. With one blow of his paw, he sent the Scarecrow spinning. Then he struck at the Tin Woodman. Little Toto, now that he had an enemy to face, ran barking toward the lion, and the great beast had opened his mouth to bite the dog when Dorothy rushed forward and slapped the lion upon his nose as hard as she could, while she cried out, "Don't you dare bite Toto! You ought to be ashamed of yourself, a big beast like you, to bite a poor little dog."
"I didn't bite him," said the lion as he rubbed his nose and with his paw where Dorothy had hit it.
"No, but you tried to," she retorted. "You're nothing but a big coward."
"I know it," said the lion, hanging his head in shame. "I've always known it, but how can I help it?"
"I don't know, I'm sure. To think of your striking a stuffed man like the poor Scarecrow."
"Is he stuffed?"
asked the lion in surprise as he watched her pick up the Scarecrow and set him upon his feet while she patted him into shape again. "Of course he's stuffed," replied Dorothy, who was still angry.
"Well, that's why he went over so easily," remarked the lion. "It astonished me to see him whirl around so. Is the other one stuffed also?"
"No," said Dorothy, "he's made of tin," and she helped the woodman up again.
"Oh, that's why he nearly blunted my claws," said the lion. "When they scratched against the tin, it made a cold shiver run down my back. What is that little animal you're so tender of?"
"He's my dog, Toto," answered Dorothy.
"Is he made of tin or stuffed?"
asked the lion. "Neither. He's a meat dog," said the girl.
"Oh, he's a curious animal and seems remarkably small now that I look at him. No one would think of biting such a little thing except a coward like me," continued the lion sadly.
"What makes you a coward?" asked Dorothy, looking at the great beast in wonder, for he was as big as a small horse.
"It's a mystery," replied the lion. "I suppose I was born that way."
"But that isn't right. The king of beasts shouldn't be a coward," said the Scarecrow.
"I know it,"
returned the lion, wiping a tear from his eye with the tip of his tail.
"It's my great sorrow and makes my life very unhappy. But whenever there's danger, my heart begins to beat fast."
"Perhaps you have heart disease," said the Tin Woodsman.
"It may be," said the lion.
"If you have," continued the Tin Woodman, "you ought to be glad, for it proves you have a heart. For my part, I have no heart, so I cannot have heart disease."
"Perhaps," said the lion thoughtfully, "if I had no heart, I should not be a coward."
"Have you brains?" asked the Scarecrow.
"I suppose so. I never looked to see," replied the lion.
"I am going to the Great Oz to ask him to give me some," remarked the Scarecrow, "for my head is stuffed with straw." "And I am going to ask him to give me a heart," said the Woodman. "And I am going to ask him to send Toto and me back to Kansas," added Dorothy.
Do you think Oz could give me courage?"
asked the Cowardly Lion.
"Just as easily as he could give me brains," said the Scarecrow.
"Or give me a heart," said the Tin Woodman. "Or send me back to Kansas," said Dorothy.
"Well, then, if you don't mind, I'll go with you," said the lion, "for my life is simply unbearable without a bit of courage."
"You will be very welcome," answered Dorothy. And following this, our wonderful musician Matt played "Somewhere Over the Rainbow." And now the sermon. Most of us know the movie version of The Wizard of Oz better than we know the book. In fact, I dare say that most of us know this story better and more deeply than we know the Bible. How many times have you seen the movie? More than once? Twice? Three times? More than 10? 20? And quite a few hands went up at more than 20. Do you remember how that scene in the dark forest went in the movie just before the travelers meet the Cowardly Lion?
Dorothy has asked the Tin Woodsman if there are any wild animals in the forest, and he replies, "Oh, just a few lions and tigers and bears." So now they come walking together in step, chanting something. Do you remember what it is? Lions and tigers and bears. Oh my! Lions and tigers and bears. Oh my! Lions and tigers and bears. Oh my! Picking up the pace each time. This is one of several ways in which the movie differs from the book, and often makes it even more enchanting. In the book, The Good Witch of the North is a very wrinkled, white-haired, very old woman, not at all like the youthful beauty played by Billy Burke, who's called Glinda in the movie. In the book, Glinda is the Good Witch of the South, whom we don't even meet until after Dorothy has destroyed the Wicked Witch of the West. In both versions, the Wicked Witch of the East is smushed by Dorothy's house, which has been whisked from Kansas and dropped into Oz by a powerful tornado, so that all we ever meet of her is her feet. And then there are her slippers. Silver in the book, but what color are they in the film? Ruby, of course. Much better for the Technicolor portion, so brilliantly sandwiched between the gray tones of the first and last scene set in Kansas. The movie's most famous line is, "What? Somehow I have a feeling we're not in Kansas anymore." Though it's not found in the book, it's become almost a proverb, making the very name of Kansas synonymous with all that's normal, bland, non-sexy, flat, and plain. Some in Kansas may have felt some resentment when the movie came out, while others may have been glad to get past the image of bleeding Kansas, ruby red with the blood of so many violent clashes over the, quote, slavery question before the Civil War. That war must have still been fresh in the mind of L. Frank Baum, the book's author, born in 1856. Kansas-born Dorothy Gale is utterly taken with Oz and the great diversity of peoples and creatures whom Baum had created. In the book, her journey is real, not a dream following a bump on the head like it is in the movie. The book's Dorothy really goes, and although she's glad to get home, she will return to Oz and its Rainbow Society many times in the many sequels that Baum wrote. He himself grew weary of Oz and tried moving on to other stories, but the public demanded that he keep returning to the magical land. His last Oz book came out after he died, while other authors kept the series alive long after. But there are some things that the movie does more powerfully than Baum could do in a book. There's no scene in the book where Dorothy sees Auntie Em in the witch's crystal ball, but the movie achieves this moment so powerfully that for years I wished it hadn't. It scared me so much. Do you remember that scene? Dorothy's locked in a room awaiting execution. The crystal ball on the table begins to flicker with light and then fills with the face of Auntie Em calling her, "Dorothy! Dorothy!" Dorothy calls back, "Auntie Em! Auntie Em!" And we feel that they can almost but not quite hear each other's voices. Just a little more effort and they'll make contact, but no. Suddenly, Auntie Em is replaced by the mocking face of the witch, cackling, "Auntie Em! Auntie Em! I'll give you Auntie Em!" Terrifying and so powerful. Who would ever think that a good little girl like Dorothy would put an end to such beautiful wickedness? Who would have ever thought that such a beautiful switcheroo would one day become so commonplace, using a down-home American mask as cover for a face that's livid with cruelty, rage, and hatred? That was some witch, played by Margaret Hamilton, so effectively that she became the model for Halloween witches for years to come. Remember the theme that would play whenever she was in pursuit of her victims? Some witch. And Judy Garland's Dorothy was some little girl. 16 and full-figured, but cast to play a 12-year-old, she had to wear a heavy system of bindings to make her flatter than Kansas while performing on a set heated to 100 degrees by the bright lights required for Technicolor at the time. But nothing could flatten out her voice. That voice. There was nothing 12 or even 16 years old about that voice, one of the most perfect instruments that has ever sounded on earth or in the heavens, a voice like silver, rubies, bluebirds, honey. The filmmakers didn't make us wait too long to hear her sing Somewhere Over the Rainbow, with phrasing and articulation that few can achieve in a lifetime of practice. The terrible physical, social, and emotional pressures that this young artist was forced to endure were transformed as her song blended longing and vulnerability with the hope and courage that perfectly fitted Dorothy's character. We'll never forget her young voice singing the one truly great song of the movie. Yes, it's followed by one song after another, all charming, but none with the standalone power of the Rainbow Song arching over all. But that's not really the purpose of those other songs, which are more like chants. Even the tuneful ones share a chant-like quality. Follow the Yellow Brick Road is one. The Munchkins use it to help set Dorothy on her path, to begin taking her journey in modular bits of sound and time, very even and regular, like the bricks themselves. It's not exactly a march, but a skipping little number that could carry you through the day like marching songs do, or work songs. Such chants have real power to regulate our movements and help coordinate them with those of others. They can help to give us strength and courage, or they can sometimes do the opposite. Consider lions and tigers and bears, oh my! Do you remember the movements that go with those words? You go through the list, lions and tigers and bears, then comes the oh my with a little jump of fear. Lions and tigers and bears, oh my! Lions and tigers and bears, oh my! By the time they actually meet the lion, Dorothy, Scarecrow, and the Tin Man have worked themselves up into a pitch of fear worse than anything the witch could induce. They've been doing a kind of witchcraft on themselves, performing enchantments. Do you know how the notion of pleased to meet you is expressed in Spanish? Women say encantada, men say encantado. As you might know or may have guessed, this means enchanted. Have you ever stopped to consider what it means to be enchanted? It's a combination of two parts, one meaning in and the other meaning to sing. To enchant is to in-sing or sing in, to put a song into someone, to make that song both begin and continue. So bewitching, throwing spells, or enchanting people has to do with putting a self-repeating bit of song into them. And what does this viral bit of language, rhythm, and melody do to us? In other words, what's the power of a self-singing song? A self-singing song. Sometimes it helps us to remember things. Sometimes it helps us to keep going, stay strong, keep up the pace, keep our spirits high. But sometimes the chant that's been put inside of us does quite the opposite. It robs us of heart, brains, and courage. And sometimes this is all too easy to do. Dorothy and her friends do it to themselves in the forest with lions and tigers and bears, oh my. But during recent election seasons, this spell goes more like immigrants, Muslims, and queers, oh my. Immigrants, Muslims, and queers, oh my. The chant that has been put inside us can surround us as well and become the very air we breathe. Immigrants, Muslims, and queers, backed by black UN helicopters, are coming to take away our guns, our freedom, and our very lives. Oh my! We have to do something. The third principle of our religious movement is acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. That's also precisely what our dear group of friends learn to do for each other as they navigate the dangers and the wonders of Oz together. That small congregation consisting of Dorothy, Scarecrow, and the Tin Man, and yes, Toto too. They discover not only the right paths to take, but also the right things to say to each other, the right things to repeat. Eventually, it's another little chant that will take Dorothy back to Kansas. You remember how that one goes. There's no place like home. 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 Now, the witch's idea of home is really just a fortress. Sending an angry tweet with her smoking broomstick, she tells the people of the Emerald City to surrender Dorothy. Help me seize this displaced child, this immigrant from Kansas, so you can be safe and free. Is that true? Once the witch gets those slippers from Dorothy, what freedom will the people gain? What might they lose instead? Lucky for them that Dorothy does get caught while trying to take the witch's broomstick. That's how she finally gets close enough to soak her with a bucket of water. What happens next? Shall we all chant the witch's lines?
I'm melting, melting! Who would have thought that a good little girl like you would put an end to my beautiful wickedness?
I hope that everyone has noticed how well we all know this story. That's part of the power of repetition. Just like when someone puts us under a spell or an enchantment, we know it better than we know the Bible. And it knows us better than the Bible does. I mean no respect to the Bible or its believers when I say this. I mean that the Wizard of Oz was forged, twice forged, in two of the powerful furnaces that shaped American history and character. The book in the post-Civil War period, and the film in the Great Depression times that did so much to shape our attitudes on color, gender, class, and power. It speaks to us in certain very specific ways that an ancient Greek or Hebrew text cannot be expected and should not be asked to do. It's forged, tempered, and shaped to go straight to our hearts and minds and to stay there. It knows what scares us, but this great story also knows that we have the power to find our way out of the woods, step out of the dark and into the light, and to finally make it home. It knows that we can overcome the little chance that others put inside us or that we put inside ourselves. We have a way of coming to our senses and finding that our brains are still there, and our hearts, and the courage to face the unknown, going all the way down to our heels. Click three times and you'll feel it. Just watch out for that puddle on the floor. Speaking of which, do you know why the witch melted away when Dorothy threw that water on her? The movie offers no explanation, but the book provides a clue. It says that when Dorothy threw the water on her, the witch began to melt away, quote, like brown sugar, until she was a, quote, brown, melted, shapeless mass on the kitchen floor. This might be a way of saying that the witch was full of other things than brown sugar. But let's stick with that for now. Sugar. I'm sure you've heard about getting a sugar rush. The problem with such stuff is that it's just too easy to swallow without chewing carefully, without paying attention. That's what's fun about the witch. She never asks us to think, just gives us a rush whenever she appears. But in the end, that's all there is to her. Just sugar. Just a rush. And then just an empty cloak bloated with gas. One more whoosh and the cloak goes flat top with nothing but a pointed hat. All it took was some nice plain water. Let's use the rest now to clean our palate and ding dong, we can sing some new songs in our own voices for a change. We're free to use their enchanting power for something so much better, like acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth whenever we come together. To accept is from a Latin word meaning to take something to oneself. It has to do with receiving, opening our hands, hearts, and brains to something from outside, or to someone. And to encourage? It sounds a bit like enchant, don't you think? It means to put courage in. Well, courage comes from an old word for heart. So we could say it means to put heart in. The heart, a simple, rhythmic thing, self-starting, self-repeating, wordless, yes, but oh so musical. Remember how fast the lion's heart used to beat? Put your hands on yours now and feel it there where you can't see it. And know that, yes, we will come out of the dark, come out of the woods, step into the light. Come out of the dark, come out of the woods, step into the light. Just keep going, step by step, beat by beat, down that yellow brick road. The one that starts right here and reaches all the way over the rainbow. So may it be.